Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin, and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me, Ben. Renowned music expert Jay Carlin over here.
Ready
to be on the pop with you.
I've already been thrown off.
I know.
In what way, how, and when did
not
you become?
Not at all. Yeah, just okay. Not at all. No, at this all. Is, no, if yeah. You're a longtime listener of the pop, you'll of course know that Ben and I are just the worst at music.
It's really not our forte.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Sometimes that's like one of those areas where it's like, did like all of our interest in like movies or fandoms or whatever, did it just like completely squish out any available room?
I know, it was like, we don't have room for music, I'm afraid.
Yeah, nope, sorry. You used up that whole closet. So.
Right, like you can hear it, you can be familiar with it, but like familiar in a way that like you've heard it, and that's about it.
Right.
That's about the end of the line right there. So I brought it up for, I'm bringing this up because, so last week, I think it was last week, we were in the office trying to like, just sort of postulate what was like the quote unquote best or like most iconic song of all time. Do you remember this?
I do, yeah. So the songs that I feel like immediately kind of popped into our mind were, like hits from the Beatles.
Yeah, of course you have to think like, there's like probably, yeah, the Beatles are in there, or like Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
or
Bohemian
like,
Rhapsody.
Yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody. And it's like, if you look it up, of course it's impossible to, I think the word iconic is like a great word, because if you say like most famous or like most played, it's like, those are like a little more like subjective and stuff.
Yeah, no,
kind
definitely.
Of things.
Right,
I mean,
yeah.
It's always going to be subjective, no matter what.
Right.
But like, I found a list of a guy who had gone through and tried to figure out this exact ranking for like, what is the most iconic song according to like what appears the most on like, you know, Rolling Stone's lists of top songs of all time versus like variety, you know, like just aggregating tons of data to try and figure out what does everyone kind of, where does all the data point to is indeed the most popular songs
okay,
like
sure,
of
sure.
all time. Yeah,
so,
right.
So, but this still has like a subjective glare to it in some capacity, which is that like on some level, regardless of the fact that it's coming from a variety of different lists, these are still lists that were all written by like fallible human beings.
They were
who all like had their own sort of like feelings, thoughts, reasons as to why these songs are.
Yeah. So whether it's because
iconic.
They were like just literally successful in money because they charted the highest or whatever. It did also take into account that there were like certain things that stood out, like just musically about them as well.
Okay. Yeah. Like musical like, complexity or something.
Yeah. Like it's set, like this is just sort of what they noticed at the end of the day. So it seemed like there was like a trend towards all the songs that were landing at the top seemed to like fall into like a category of the same sort of things.
Okay.
So like, I says like they use sound in a varied and dynamic way. Around 80% are in a major key. The average tempo is 125 beats per minute. So they have low chord changes, and even like using the like a lot of the same words in the lyrics, like baby or love, which is not surprising.
Oh yeah,
those
yeah,
are just
yeah,
like
yeah,
really common song lyric words.
Sure.
Anyway, so. If you go through it, of course, there are of course a bunch in there that you would absolutely imagine would be in there. We mentioned the Beatles, Hey Jude, number 6.
Okay.
We mentioned Bohemian Rhapsody, number 5.
Okay.
Imagine by John Lennon at number 2 on this. So it's like a bunch of very like things you'd really expect to be there. But Ben, do you have any idea what the number 1 song according to this list would be?
I know that the song, so I'm curious as to see whether or not somehow, some way we actually got lucky, because I think the song that we were talking about is, oh my gosh, the song from Journey. What is the Don't Stop Believing?
Don't Stop Believing. That was my guess immediately. And people were like, what's the most iconic song of all time? That was my first guess, was Don't Stop Believing. I don't even see that in the top 26. That's what I can see right now. And I don't see it on there at all. I'm like double checking my math here. Am I reading it correctly?
And I was going to say top 26 means it's 26th, right? Like it's not like 13th. And you're like, yeah, it's not in the top 26. Or it's in the top 26. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at the whole list here. I'm like, is it not even in the top 50 or according to this list? Maybe not. Okay.
Man, that seems so unlikely. Okay, it so I have feelings on that, but we'll come back to it in just a second. So lay it on me. Okay. Top song
according
of all
to
time,
this, and this was, yeah, and I saw this on a couple other lists as well, so it didn't surprise me that it was the top here. But apparently, the most iconic song of all time is "Smells Like Teen Spirit" by Nirvana.
Dang,
I know. Which like that is exactly how it starts. I'm impressed that you could do that, because like when I read that, I was like, what? Like, what? Like, I couldn't even tell you what that song sounds like. And that, which is to say, I know I've heard it over 100 times in my life. It came out while we were alive.
Yeah.
You know, even when we were young.
Right.
Yes. So like, I know it is this is another one of those like Ben and Jay are bad at music sort of things. I would say for most of my life, I've been unsure whether it smells like teen spirit or team spirit.
Yeah.
Because it seems like team spirit is what you hear about more often in just regular talking
in everyday vernacular.
Like, what's your team spirit? You know, it's like, right, you go and root for that team, and it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Smells like team spirit.
Yes, yeah.
Even
yeah,
smells has like a locker room feel to it. You know,
it sure does. Yeah, yeah, it's like, you know what, this smells like team spirit.
It's
not. Like, it feels like the type of thing you'd say like at halftime, as like the team is getting fired up because they're like down by 10, and it's sort of like, all right, y'all, this smells like team spirit that I've we
exactly
got in here. Let's go out there, let's win this game.
But then I'm also like, where is it teen spirit? And it's like one of those things where like, you know, it's such a popular song that this is one of those things it's like you can't be wrong about, because it will show your hand. So this is me just admitting openly that I have been unsure about the true title of this song until this morning.
Yeah. This is the kind of thing where it's like, I feel like I would say it in such a way that's like, smells like team spirit.
Exactly.
And
you'd be like, what'd you say?
What did you just say? Slow down and be like, smells like team spirit.
Yeah, it smells like team spirit.
Did you say teen or team?
Yeah. I said, like, what does it matter?
Yeah.
It smells like team spirit. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
So one, I felt just horribly embarrassed as ever when it comes to music, that I'm like the number one, like the apparently according to like many lists, Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana is number one, because I'm like, man, I don't even know the name of it. Then I'm like, what does it even sound like? Like, I'm like, I'm like trying to summon the lyrics "Smells Like Teen Spirit" in my head. And it's like, for one, that's not helpful, because those lyrics are not in the song at all.
Are they not?
They're not in the song.
No way.
It's not like, I think that's also been part of my problem with the song. People are like, yeah, "Smells Like Teen Spirit" by Nirvana. And be like, yeah, like which one was that? And like, I'm like trying to remember, like, I don't, because it feels like, of course, if that's the name of this super incredibly popular song, you'd know the chorus to it. And the chorus would definitely be "Smells Like Teen Spirit." And and it's like, but it's not. It's not. And then, so like on the drive to work today, I was like, you know what? I've got to correct this. This is something in my life. I need to go back. I'm like, I'm looking up "Smells Like Teen Spirit"
yes,
right now. And I'm going to listen to it. Of course, as soon as it started, I was like, ah, this song. Right. And I'm like listening to it, and I go through, and it probably, and I'm like really trying to listen to the song as I come in, because I'm like, there must, because like I've heard it many times, and I'm like, it's never registered to me as like the greatest song ever, but I'm like, maybe there's something in the lyrics, maybe it like really spoke to people in a certain way that like I've just never like paid attention to. And I would say it got like, I don't know, a minute into the song, and I was like, I don't know if I've understood one word that has been, I couldn't repeat to you a single lyric from this song yet, except hello. And even that, the third hello on each one is actually how low.
No way. Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah. This was going to be my question actually, because I think like there is the like subjective response, I think, that, you know, like everybody might have. And then there's always going to be the conversation about like overall influence that like a particular like band, singer, song person. And you're talking about like Kurt Cobain and Nirvana. And
oh, I learned a lot about Kurt Cobain this morning.
Yes.
Do you know he's dead?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very famously. I did know this one.
Yeah. Yes. I learned that this morning. This is one of those names, like, you hear that name around music a lot. I'm like, yeah, Kurt Cobain. And I think his name sounds so much like cocaine.
Sure.
That I'm always like, that are those related, you know,
is this like part of like his like
yeah, it's just like a chosen name because it sounds like cocaine. It's like, that's just his name.
That's just his name.
Just his name.
Yeah.
So anyway, you guys are like pausing to guffaw at my ignorance here. And it's like, I'm telling you, so bad at music. Anyway.
I get you completely. Cause like, this is like one of those things like where it's like, I think people will talk about like the Beatles or whatever. And I think of them as like people from history, but then some of the Beatles are just still alive also. And that's like one of those things where I'm like, wait, they have this amount of legacy and some of them are still alive.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, that's wild to me. But so anyway, yeah, going back to Smells Like Teen Spirit, like to me, there's like an interesting conversation to be had because a lot of the bands like that, it was funny the way you actually phrased it. Cause you were like this came out when we were young.
I know. Yeah. I was like, yeah, that's the name of the
festival. Yeah. So like in the past couple of years, I've gone to this music festival that like has absolutely, like spoken to both like me and brother-in-law Mike, who like, you know, grew up listening to all of these various bands.
Yeah.
All of whom I would wager would say that Nirvana was one of their early influences. There's almost,
I mean, that's basically it too. It's basically like this song is like the spawning point of like the entire punk pop genre.
Yes.
And it is like the beginning of the takeover of like grunge music in like 1991, which sounds right. You know, it's like coming out of the 80s and it's like really shifting from like rock and roll to like grunge rock kind of stuff. And like, so it's like, its historical relevance is huge, especially like throughout the 90s into like the early 2000s.
Yes. Yeah. Well, so, and here's the question though, because like a lot of these bands that like we would have grown up listening to, it was sort of, I mean, in every new generation as they grow up with their specific kind and sound of music is going to be met with elders sort of coming to them and saying like, no, this isn't real music or something.
Right.
Like there's going to be this sort of like dissenting opinion, I think, about like whatever is modern, because it's going to sound so different from what anybody else grew up with. And so like, because that sound doesn't match what they know to be music, like, and this is not like a sweeping declaration. I'm sure there's plenty of people that like, you know, can constantly stay with the times and constantly love like whatever is new or whatever. But I think that this can happen. And oftentimes music marks a generation. But what I would say that's kind of interesting about it is that like, you know, having grown up liking a lot of these bands, I often felt as though like, I couldn't even say like, oh, like Rise Against, one of my favorite bands, because it was sort of like this is a band that people are not going to know. And then if you were to say like Blink 182, it would seem like...
When you say
like,
Rise Against...
That's a band.
I'm aware.
Okay,
so I know that's a band. Is that shorthand for Rise Against the Machine?
No, it is not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that a separate band?
That is a separate band.
Rage
Against the Machine.
Oh my gosh. Those two things in my head. That's another one of those things where I'm just always like, yes... Whenever I've heard people say Rise Against, I assume they're shorthanding Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah.
Because I assume the title is Rise Against the Machine, which also sounds right.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, Rise Against. Yeah. It's like, okay, right. Because you don't want to say, because it's a long name. That's why you're shortening it. Right,
exactly. Yes. Yeah. Which would totally make sense. Gosh,
this is like, I'm so. I'm saying it and I'm just like, I feel so embarrassed. And like, even when I was like looking this up, I was like, I can't believe this seems like this morning, I'm like, this is the number one song. I'm like, you know, last year at When We Were Young, they like, I remember the headliners were Blink 182 and Green Day. And I was like, that's going to be like almost impossible to top for this particular genre of music. And then I was looking at this and I was like, you know what would probably top it? I can't believe they're not even there. And I'm like, oh.
Oh, you mean Nirvana?
Like,
oh,
yes, Nirvana. Yeah, that's why you haven't heard about them much here recently or for a long time now.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And it's like, yeah. And then it's like this is like, I know it just sounds so stupid. And it's like, why haven't you Googled this before now? It's like, cause I just haven't. So yes, Kurt Cobain is the lead singer of Nirvana, who's dead, but launched a like revolutionary style of music.
Yes, yes. But yes. So this is like sort of like the next piece that I was going to get to is sort of like I, having grown up liking this music and feeling in some ways as though like the kind of music that I, that resonated with me, that I chose or whatever, was never like regarded as like, you know, air quotes, big air quotes, sarcastic air quotes, like not real music. You know, so it's sort of like, it's fascinating to me for like, because it's like, yes, spawned a whole kind of like genre of music, a whole new sound, like, you know, hundreds of bands literally exist because that song existed. Like all of that being true, I would have still said like what he launched was with that song launched was like a genre of music that had not historically been taken terribly seriously.
Yeah. But it's then, so interesting whenever you talk, because I've heard you say this so many times that like when you were growing up, people treated you like that's not real music or something. It's like that wasn't even present in my life. Like, if it was music and it was on the radio, it was music, you know? Like,
oh yeah, sure. Yeah. So, I mean, this is sort of what I think is kind of interesting, because I think what would be a really cool way to test this particular metric would be to like almost have some of these like most iconic songs of all time played in stadiums around the globe and having everybody in the audience wearing heart rate monitors so that you could literally be testing the physiological reaction and excitement attached like on average per person to all of like these various songs being played, because that is the one where I bet if Don't Stop Believing comes on and every single freaking person on the planet knows the lyrics, because there is nothing more satisfying than being able to sing along to a song at full top volume right. in your car by yourself. That is like the most enjoyable way to me to experience music. And because you're right, it's like so often the case, like some of these most iconic songs, like Bohemian Rhapsody, like I think I went down the rabbit hole about a year ago trying to figure out like what is this song about, like, because I don't understand it. I'm right. Like, you know, it's like that's one where I think
people have been arguing about that forever.
Oh no, I know. Yeah. Like, you know, so this is, it's like a weird one too, because it's like I can sing along with a lot of that song and still have no idea
right
like what I'm saying out loud.
Yeah.
Like what words did I just utter?
I know, like what am I saying as I say this out loud? Am right. I like, am I aligning myself with some sort of viewpoint that I wouldn't agree with if I knew what I was saying?
Yes. Yeah. So that's another one of those too, where I think last week in Office, there was a conversation happening between office manager Kat and podcast editor, video editor Isabel, where they were talking about like listening through like one of the Taylor Swift albums from like start to finish and like following the narrative, like from song to song to song to song, something I've literally never done in my entire life.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But then there's a piece of me that's sort of like, am I missing out on like a truly incredible experience by going through and finding somebody's album that has one of these running narratives and being, because that's something that would draw me in.
Well, okay, I know that is very interesting. It's like, yeah, I personally have not done that myself either, and I don't think every album necessarily like follows that trend. It's not
I don't think all of them do. Yeah. But some of them do.
I want to say like specifically that might interest you, like Green Day released like a series of albums that I think were called like Uno Dos Tres or something.
Oh, interesting.
And okay. They are all like sections of a story
okay
together, and they were released like quickly after one another and stuff like that. So
well, wasn't there like a Green Day Broadway show for
there
a
is
while?
I mean there still is. It's called American Idiot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
That's a good one. But that's yeah. another one that I feel like if it came on, people's heart rates would launch up for.
Yeah.
American
for sure.
Idiot.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hilariously, I've had this note on the doc for a while, and it's not like a big point or anything, but like one of the in my Oculus, the game I play all the time is Beat Sabers.
Yes.
Which is like, I think, the best VR game available at the moment.
It's like Dance Dance Revolution, but lightsabers.
Yes. Yeah. If you haven't played it, it's so cool. I still love it. It's like the novelty is not worn off on me at all. I still love it. Yeah, just these blocks are flying at you with music. And it's like DDR, but you're holding lightsabers and you have to hit the blocks as they come.
Dude, whenever I watch you play it, it's like watching somebody enter like a flow state.
Dude. That is part of why I love it. Like, not only is it just sort of like challenging, but like there are times where it's just like the blocks will be coming and like your brain like can't, it's like you, like your brain immediately is just sort of like, I can't take in all this information, and just sort of like it's exactly like being in the zone in the movie Soul, where all of a sudden it's like your arms are just acting independent of your body in this like reactionary way. And sometimes like a series of like, you know, 50 blocks will go by and it's just like, and you're like, I'll, like it'll go through and I'll be like, I don't know how I did that. Like, what just happened? You know, it's like, it is, it, it is the number one thing in my life that lets me like feel like that zone flow state. Yes.
No, I know. And which is amazing. Like there's this, I can give people name of the win for their bingo cards, but this is like one of my favorite observations from Patrick Rothfuss inside of, I think it's Wise Man's Fear when it actually happens. But there's like this scene where like they're trying to teach like the art of naming, which is like understand something so like inherently to its core that you are what they called your sleeping mind is the thing that has been able to like fully access your knowledge and awareness over this particular thing. And that knowledge and awareness gives you then control over something substantial, like
the
name,
wind,
the wind or the name of stone or fire or whatever. So then you can manipulate it because you understand it so completely through in a way that you can't articulate verbally, but like your brain knows deep down inside. And so the exercise that the professor gives, like this like classroom of like the smartest people you've ever met is like in like, you know, 1 minute, I'm going to toss this stone with 3 heft of force and I need you to calculate where it's going to land.
Right.
And you know, all these like brilliant minds then go to work with all these like parabolas and like trying to draw like, okay, like weight ratios and wind speed variances and like all the like the physics involved with like where the stone should land. And you know, at the end of like 15 minutes or whatever, they're like, we have no idea where it would go. There's too many variables. It doesn't make any sense. And then, you know, he like runs down the hall, he opens the door, calls your runner boy in, the runner boy comes over. He's like, stand there, Jeremy. And then he throws the stone through the air and Jeremy catches it out of the air and he's like, Jeremy's a genius,
right?
You know, and it's like, it's, I mean, it's funny because it's such a simple example of such a complex thing,
right?
But like the idea is sort of that like your brain can just sort of like it's not like using specific degrees and angles and like, you know, turning your hand at this ratio at this speed in order to catch the stone, even though it is doing all of
those.
It's
like
things.
Doing a lot of predictive stuff for you and you just catch it out of the air.
You just catch it out of the air because it's otherwise a fairly simple task to complete. But then when you apply that same type of logic to something like playing the piano a la your example from Soul, or in this particular case, like watching you play like the Beat Saber, so it's sort of like you're not thinking like, okay, right hand up, left hand over, like
not,
whatever.
It's not
like,
only am I not, but the more you try and think about it that way, like the worse you will play.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, it's rather amazing to like see anybody ever enter that. Like that is, those are the moments in time, like where I think throughout history, there have been like a small handful of occasions where I have like entered a flow state and it was just sort of like, oh my gosh, I am incredible at this thing. And then you exit it. And then it's like, then you try to find it again and it's there like, are, and then it's gone.
There are absolutely moments like in my life where I'm just like, I don't know where like, I think back, there was this one like it makes me want to play basketball more.
No, sure,
like,
yeah.
Because, like, you know, I used to play it, you know, we used to, like, shoot just hoops all the time out in the cul-de-sac. And, like, I remember one morning, you know, just a bunch of guys were like, hey, we're going to play some pickup basketball over at the park. Anyone who wants to join or whatever. I was like, absolutely, let's go. It'd be fun. And, like, whenever I play pickup basketball, I'm never, like, stand out or anything. It's just, like, it's just fun to be playing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And, like, I remember it was something about that morning. And it was like I entered it and it was like I could not miss. And I would, like, I think I hit one from, like, you know, 10 beyond the three. And I just sort of threw it up because like there's no one to pass to. I can't dribble anymore. I need to do something with the ball. And I remember throwing it up and it just like going through the rim in this like absolutely perfect way that the net almost didn't move. And like everyone on the court turned around and looked at me and I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how it happened either.
It's like, should I get lucky? Yeah. Or like
I was just getting rid of the ball. I honestly didn't think it was going in. I just sort of, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and but it's like did. But yes. It did. And it was like that, like I don't know what was going on because it was like it was just like that morning. It was like I was you were in there. You were in the flow state or whatever.
No, I know. Yeah, I had a similar experience one time also in the cul-de-sac. Well, I guess you were in the cul-de-sac for yours, but I had a flow state in the cul-de-sac once where I think like when we were super young, we were into roller hockey. And so our current Ethan, the editor for Super Carlin Brothers, formerly of Popcorn Culture, who's just now switched like which job he works on, him and I think our younger brother Tyler were like, we were into like Rocket League.
Yeah.
And it was like, we should start like a local hockey game, like tournament type thing, and like we'll have teams and it'll be so fun. And it was like, oh my gosh, this would be so great. So I was supposed to be the coach.
Yeah.
And so I remember going out there on my blades and like I was always like, this was like the sport that I did actually like connect with the fastest. But I do remember like while I was like chatting with them and it was like, all right, so we're gonna try to like, you know, let's do an exercise where you try to throw the puck and you know, like from the manhole cover into the back of the tipped over trash can that we were using as like our makeshift goal or whatever. And it was like, it didn't matter where on the cul-de-sac I was, I could like throw the ball into like the upper like, you know, not corners of a circle, but like upper like edges of the trash can over and over and over again. And I was like, I don't even know what's happening right now. Like, I am not even this good.
Right. Like, it's at like, this sport. How like, is it happening right now?
Yeah. It was really weird.
Yes. There are weird things.
But Sandwich,
I just remembered. Sorry. This is another one. Like this is one that I can never even tell to people because there's like, yeah, sure. But like we had a dartboard in college. And so, you know, sometimes you're just sitting there, you have nothing to do.
Yeah. Naturally. You just
throw it over and over and over. And I think darts is very much one of those games. Where it's like the more you try and think about it, like the worse you're gonna do.
Sure.
Like if you're just, but it's like once you're just sort of like in the zone, it's like you can throw them so perfect. And you know, as ever with like college, you know, you start, well, when you have it in a room, you just start like moving around the room. Why throw it straight when I could throw it at a huge angle or whatever?
Sure.
And it's like I could almost never like get the bullseye consistently or whatever. I remember one day I was like leaving the house and I was like, oh, I'm still holding the darts, and I just turned around, no one else was there, and I was just, for the sake of putting the darts away and not having to walk back to the board, I just threw them at the board, and it was like 1, 2, 3, and they all landed like on the bullseye, and I was like, what just happened? Because it wasn't even straight, it was like at an angle from this stupid distance, and I was like, no one's here.
No one saw this.
Like, what just man,
it's too bad.
And it's like I don't know what happened right there, but it's something about it just like made sense. It's like, yeah, everything makes sense, all of the physics right now. Oh my God.
On behalf of myself and the rest of the Little Kernel community, just imagine the collective uproar.
Imagine that, just like you know, whoa, you're all retroactively impressed by this thing.
Yes. Like, so
nobody saw.
This is like, we'll call it circa like 2010 just for safe math. So it's like people around the globe on 2010 remember a moment of remarkable excitement overwhelming them and nobody knew why. But now we know the answer.
Now we know the answer. Now we know the answer. Yeah. You were there that day. It was like, whoa, what happened? Like,
what was that?
I know. Anyway, God, how do we get into flow states?
Beat Sabers.
So, because we were talking about Green Day.
Yes.
And I just, so Luke has played the VR, has played Beat Sabers. Like, he tried it a little bit a couple years ago, and it's sort of like he would put it on and he couldn't really like do it, but he's a couple years older and he had some experience with it. So I was like, oh, he can just try it again or whatever. And you can like change all the settings so you don't have to hit the arrows in like the correct order. You just have to hit the blocks at all.
Okay.
And you can like slow the song down. You can put it on easy mode. So I basically got like all the easy things set up for him or whatever.
Sure.
And then the other thing that makes it hard is that like I can't see what he sees. So if you have to like select menu options, it's
that sounds hard. Yeah.
You can do it on your phone, and then it's always like, no, stand here. Like, don't. And it's like, you know, in order for the game to make sense, like you have to stare exactly forward so I can center the screen to your face. But it's like, they don't understand what's happening. So they're just like looking around, like, stop moving. Anyway, I don't want to have to continuously select new things. So I was just trying to select like the longest song available for him to play.
Sure.
And then, you know, it's at like slow speed. So it's like, yeah, this is going to take like 6 minutes before I have to come interact with this again.
Right.
But the song I chose was Boulevard of Broken Dreams by Green Day.
Nice. Just,
which is like the GMA anthem, if you don't know.
It basically is. It was the funniest thing ever. Yeah. But like, yeah. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. Which is like, it feels like the subject matter of the song doesn't match at all, but not the point. But so he plays it like 2 or 3 times and he's like, Daddy, I just love this song. This is a great song. And I was just like, of course you do.
Of course you do.
Of course you do.
It's in your DNA.
It's in your blood to love this song, son.
That is so funny.
I know.
It is such a great song. But I mean, it was the number of times that I feel like we would all be in the car driving around, literally going nowhere, just singing this song at full volume, which would inevitably like make all of our, like, it would be like, you know, cold outside or whatever, which probably we weren't doing some other activity. But I feel like it would always like fog up the windows in one of our cars. Yeah. So then we would get like pulled over and like, you know, police officers would come up and be like, what are you boys up to? And be like, we're just singing Green Day.
Yeah.
Like
karaoke?
Really loud.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like,
and they don't believe you at all. You're just like four teenagers in like a foggy car. Like,
oh, I know.
You it's are like, up to no good, friends.
Like, and the funniest thing in the world is that it's like at the time it was like the level of injustice I always felt about the frequency at which we were getting pulled over for no reason. I was like, this is so ridiculous. Like, why is this always happening to us? Like, it's like we are not doing anything wrong. And it was like, and that was the honest truth.
It really was.
We were not doing anything wrong. And it was like, but like every single time you felt like the cops were walking away from the car, just being like, well, we couldn't find it, but it was in there.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, it's almost as if like we had successfully gotten out of like all of these instances. And it was like, nope, we were just being kind of unusual.
We're not smoking or anything.
No, we really just weren't. There, I remember one time you had these like really old mats in the bottom of your car. And so it had like this like rubber material that was like actively dry rotting.
Yeah.
And so underneath the floor mats was just like all this like black, like dust or
must like, have looked like ashes or something.
Yes. Yeah. So there was that. And then I remember like we had, I think like our sweats from our cross country team. So like, you know, you would go to like the meets on Saturday morning and everybody be wearing like a matching like windbreaker and like long like athletic pants or whatever. And you must have like stuffed them underneath the seat, which then of course looks like we've wrapped something up and stuffed it underneath the seat. So right. Like, you know, like we're going through this like whole traffic stop and they're just like, well, what's that? Well, what's that? Well, what's that? What's in there? What's over there? What's going on with this? And it's, yeah, like, it's like, these are my sweatpants.
These are my
Why
pants.
Do you want to see those?
I know. Yeah.
Like,
you're also looking at it from the perspective of people who don't even know what you could, like, why anything looks suspicious.
Yes, exactly. So like, it's like,
what are you
like,
talking
why are you
about?
Being so weird.
I know.
Like, yeah. I think there was one night, like, where you had, like all the, like, Harry Potter, or you had, like, a Harry Potter book, like, on DVD or something, and they, like, wanted to, like, examine the, like, case.
Yeah.
And so, like, we kept being, like, you know, we kept making all these jokes for, like, months afterwards about, like how Harry Potter books were a great, like way to conceal your hidden goods or whatever,
right, yeah,
inside of those pages.
Your contraband.
Yeah, your contraband. That's exactly it. Oh, man. Yeah, it was so funny, but it happened all the time.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. So we're peeling it back. We're getting back to Nirvana here.
Okay.
Which, as I was going through it, I was like looking at the lyrics to like confirm that Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Nice.
Was not like one of the lyrics. And then I was like, why isn't it one of the lyrics? If it's not in the lyrics, why is it the name of the song?
Right.
Which turns out that it is a super random story. But basically, Kurt Cobain was hanging out with the lead singer from this other band, and she and her friends had been at like a convenience store or like a where there was deodorant for sale that was the scent was labeled Teen Spirit. Okay. And they thought it was hilarious. Like, what does that mean? What does Teen Spirit smell like? Like a locker room, like weed, like sweat, you know, like
right.
A dumb name for a deodorant or whatever.
Sure, sure.
So then apparently they kept joking about it, like everything smells like Teen Spirit. Like, oh, what's that? Does that smell like Teen Spirit? Or, you know, and then so that she was hanging out with Kurt, and I guess like at some point while they're hanging out, she like wrote on their motel wall in Sharpie, like, Kurt smells like Teen Spirit. And he woke up the next day and was like, Smells Like Teen Spirit is a great name for a song. And he asked her if he could use it. And like, I guess it still like represents sort of the spirit of the song.
Okay. Okay.
I guess. But then, I guess he said there's a line there that says, one of the lines that I like went back and listened to was, we're here now, entertain us.
Okay.
Were you aware of that lyric?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Which he guesses, he said like that sentiment like encapsulates like Smells Like Teen Spirit. And I was like, I'm not sure if I totally understood his meaning with it, but he was said like that was my catchphrase for an icebreaker whenever I show up to a party for years, because a lot of times you go to a party and it's just like you're standing around talking and it's like, well, we're here now, entertain us, you invited us here. You know? Like that was his icebreaker thing,
man. What a good observation.
I know, because like as soon as I read that, I was like, that is so true. Like some like you used to have these parties and it would be like there you like understood like the X factorness of a party, that like I don't want to just have a party where people showed up and talked and left,
right?
You know,
right, yeah.
And it's like there needs to be things to do at a party for people to party. Like it, like you would feel like just having like food and drinks and good decorations and a theme would lead to like, yeah, people can, and then people who know each other drink some alcohol, fun merriment is had.
Merriment is had, of right. course. Yes, 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 yes.
But it's like there are definitely a number of parties I've been to as an adult where it's like, how was that party? And it's like, well, you know, I went, I had some conversations, I ate some food, and I left.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's,
I was like, yeah, that was it was it.
The exchanging of like social niceties, I think, is usually like sort of the, it's the like, the, I feel like it's the recipe for like a forgettable party, basically, is if like the primary thing that you did was like, hey, what's going on with you?
Exactly.
That's so cool. I'm so glad to hear. Congrats, man. That's really cool. Anyway, yeah, so here's my thing. And then they say the same thing back and you're like, all right, well, hey, it was great to catch up. All right. We'll have to grab lunch soon.
I'm going
to
grab some meatballs off the pot. Yeah,
exactly.
And
then you
just walk around and find the next group of people to talk, have that same conversation with.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And it's sort of like the thing to me that I think slowly became very obvious. It was like all of like our GMA antics in high school, it was always the things that always ended up being memorable stories were always that we were attempting to go and do some ridiculous thing that we thought we were capable of doing. And it was so absurd and over the top that then all of the recollections of that thing ended up being all of the stories. Yeah. And I was like, okay, that is what makes something fun. But then you have to like, when you host a party, you're attempting to like, how do you integrate something into a party so that like, when you look back on it, you're like, oh, from that party, that was that thing.
That was that thing those people did.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, and I think like, I don't even know. I mean, like not to dish on board games or anything like that. The question is like with a board game, like even if you were to like have people over for this particular occasion, it's like you need to have such a momentous thing happen inside of the board game so that like in the future, you're like, oh my gosh, you remember that one night that we were playing like Gin Rummy and there was that, you totally played that one card in a way that was miraculous. And
yeah.
We'll never forget it. Like, but that's what you want, you know, right. Like you know, so maybe you have a bunch of game nights so that eventually something truly remarkable happens.
Indeed.
You know, and then that way that gets to be like the encapsulated memory that then everybody gets to share and look back on together and cherish.
Yes. I mean, so I've had many a board game night where I can look back and like think of specific things that happened just inside the game.
That's good.
Yeah. Not too recently, we had some new friends came over and they were like, oh, I'm so in, you know, like they love board. They, you know, their collection was huge. They brought over, they had a backpack that was for carrying board games and stuff. And I like, I was like, oh, this is good. You guys brought over a bunch of stuff I've never seen before. It's very good. And I think like, it was almost like, I almost think like what the husband in the situation loved the most was like sharing the games with other people.
Oh,
almost
totally.
More than like playing it. It was just like, he was having such a good time, like explaining how this worked and like how this is doing. And I'm like listening to it. And I think for the most part, he must not interact with other people who are like big into gaming. It's just like, this is like, I'm introducing you to a world.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's like, I'm like listening. I'm like taking it all in. Like, I'm just like listening to the rules or whatever. And I remember we played this game. I couldn't even tell you the name of it. It was like you were trying to conquer some sort of Scottish Highland situation.
Okay, cool.
Or whatever. And I'm like listening and I'm like, so how do you like, what is the win condition? Like, how do you win? It's like, well, either this happens or this happens or this happens. And I remember we're like several rounds into the game and I'm just like, I've got checkmate, you know? Like, I'm paying attention so hard to the board and it's like my turn comes around and I'm like, so this, and I'm pretty sure I won, right? Like, cause you said this and I remember he looked at the board like, huh, well, I guess you did. You know? It was like at no point did he think people were like playing seriously. It's like, we're all just sort of like, I'm just telling you about the game sort of thing. You know, it's just like,
yeah. It's like, wait a second. This guy takes it very seriously. Yeah.
Like welcome all those random win conditions. You said, I was listening.
I was. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. I'm working hard over here and you guys don't see what I'm doing. So, okay.
This is pretty classy, Jay. To be honest with you, that does remind me an awful lot of like a lot of like my own aquarium keeping experiences where I think like it was so often the case that like I would go, you know, to like we had like this retail store in Daleville, Virginia, you know, it's like a little hole in the wall, like a strip mall type thing. And it was sort of like, I think what I really enjoyed was getting to go and sort of like be a coach for people who were like entering the hobby for the first time.
Yeah.
Because I had just like a million anecdotes and a million stories and I could talk about aquariums probably till I'm blue in the face. Like I could just keep going.
Yeah.
You know, like with all these like various things. But I think it was almost like I very quickly like learned the phrase like do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
Because it was like I knew all the fundamentals. I knew how to coach somebody, how to be good at it. It's like if you were to go and look at my own tank, you probably wouldn't be like, wow, like what happened there? You know, it's like, oh, I didn't follow any of my own advice is what happened there. It's like, yes, you because I can give you the advice and then you take that advice and go implement it, it will work. But if you try to do anything like me where I think I can bend every single rule, it won't work at all.
Right, yeah.
It's like, I know so much about this that I don't have to follow the rules is basically.
Exactly, like exactly.
What, yeah.
There's got to be a name for that. Like, I'm so informed, I don't have to follow the rules.
Yes, I know, right? I know. And I feel like there's probably innocuous variations of it where it's like, you know, an aquarium hobby in Southwest Virginia. And then there's like dangerous versions of it where it's like being a politician of like, you know, an entire
state. Right. Yeah. Like, there's absolutely, yes, I'm sure there are extremely dangerous versions of it.
Yes.
I know. Yeah. Where you're just like, I couldn't possibly commit to this because I believe so strongly about it. And it's like, you're the worst offender I know, friend.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. You got to be. Yeah. Right. That's it. Oh, man. Anyway, transition.
Popcorn culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me, it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paperclip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Okay, so there is the like a kind of interesting set of, so I feel like we touched on like a the corner edges of it a little bit, like sort of me talking about like doing like working the aquarium store or whatever.
Okay.
And so like there's sort of like an interesting like couple layers to, I think, what was actually providing me the enjoyment while coaching people through doing like their aquarium related stuff.
Okay.
And I think the big question in my mind is, was it the aquariums themselves that I had like a fascination with, which I know on some level the answer to that question is yes.
Right.
But then I think the other, because that was something I was doing before ever interacting with other people inside of the hobby at all. But the other question about it is that I think on some level, what I was discovering is that there was the personal enjoyment in getting to be like in a like mentor or like leadership position to where somebody else found them in find themselves inside of like this shared experience. And so it, you could possibly even compare it to like the hockey example that I gave earlier in the cul-de-sac, where it was like this is something that I have some amount of skill at. And because these two people are looking at me for like further instruction or advice or something, it's sort of like that fills me with so much more like happiness and enjoyment about the experience.
Yeah.
That I think it actually like amplified my own abilities.
Okay.
In some ways. But what's kind of fascinating, and hopefully I'll be able to frame this all together in a way that will ultimately make sense. But it sort of goes back, I don't know if you remember or not, but a couple of years now ago, I did a fitness routine called 75 Hard.
I absolutely remember.
Yes. So the basic premise between 75 Hard is it's 75 days, and there's sort of like all these associated like commitments that you make attached to it, where you're going to like exercise twice a day. You don't have to pick a specific diet for 75 Hard, but you have to pick a diet and stick to it every single day. There's like no alcohol. You have to drink a gallon of water every day. And read 10 pages of nonfiction. And then the other thing I think is supposed to like be like taking a progress photo. I can't remember if I've got all the specific details, but you can Google it. It's right, everywhere. Yeah. So roughly speaking, that is sort of like some of the stuff that I was doing. And so inside of like reading these nonfiction pages, this was sort of something that I didn't really anticipate impacting me so considerably.
Okay.
Like, you know, that was the part of it where I sort of felt like I felt like the creators of the challenge were attempting to like fold in something that provided the challenge overall with like something like kind of intellectual. Uh-huh. So that it wasn't just such like a
bro challenge.
Yeah. It's like this is sort of like for like whole body, whole self wellness,
right?
Not just simply like your physical fitness,
right,
necessarily. But what was really interesting about it is I was reading through these self-help books is that I feel like I was like drawing takeaways that I probably couldn't actually articulate the specific words of the underlying notions. However, I think like as time has gone on, I've been able to slowly identify what these two things mean. And what's interesting is that there were two concepts that I feel like I was simultaneously subscribing to that are actively exactly opposites of each other.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. So both of these words are going to sound very like, well, depending on like, I don't know, they could sound like kind of like SAT, but I think that the underlying principles behind them are not hard to understand or relate to.
Okay.
So that's like my technobabble warning in case these words are otherwise potentially new to your vernacular.
Okay.
So
all right,
the two competing ideas are hedonism and nihilism. And they're basically, hedonism is sort of this like central approach where everything that you're doing in life is to activate or try to ensure as much just like overall pleasure or enjoyment as humanly possible. So like every decision you make is attempting to keep in mind like what will make me happiest. Like what can I eat for dinner that will make me like, you know, like that will be like the thing I'm looking forward to the most. And like, what show will I watch tonight that will make me this?
Yeah,
and like
maximum enjoyment at all times.
Maximum enjoyment at all times. And right. And to be fair, like there's obviously to both of these examples, there are layers, and that is almost like part of the point that I will be attempting to construct.
Okay.
That's like the most like extreme version of one hand of the spectrum. And then probably part of like what finally clicked for me is there's a phrase underneath hedonism called the hedonic treadmill. And the hedonic treadmill states that basically your baseline happiness is usually about the same almost no matter what, even if like, you know, oh, I went and got like a new car, so that like gave me like a peak, but then like, oh, there was like, you know, I got like sick this week, so that was kind of like a valley. But it's sort of like your life is going to be these like ups and downs, and then like, but you're always returning to essentially a baseline happiness.
Okay.
And I think a lot of times the hedonic treadmill can kind of, they give it that name because it's almost like you're running in place a little bit,
mm-hmm.
because like things like social media or like, you know, like shopping can sometimes be things that might feed into your hedonic treadmill, where it's like, oh, I posted a new picture. That picture got like this number of likes and comments or messages or whatever attached to it. And that gave me like a lift. But then like the argument is that sort of like, despite the fact that that lift happened, like it doesn't make you overall happier,
right,
as a person. Your baseline happiness is still probably about what your baseline happiness is, and the question is then, you know, again, you kind of go back to that like, how do you lift the overall baseline happiness, not the waves that flow around it?
Yeah.
Are we following?
Yes.
Okay. And so I think for me, this was like something that like I read about this and I was like, okay, I am starting to recognize this pattern of behavior inside of myself all the time. Like I would regularly be trying to set up like kind of to your point, like parties or trips or purchases or, you know, like again, like going back to like social media, like, you know, posts or whatever, like, you know, I was trying to constantly like lob into the future, like kind of Pac-Man style, where if you can imagine like the little yellow circle chomping along, it's like, you got to make sure you keep putting dots out into the future so that there's more and more and more for a little Pac-Man to eat.
Right.
And I'm Pac-Man.
You're Pac-Man.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So I think a huge piece of like my self-reflection about this was like, man, like I am constantly trying to play this game of keep it up with life,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it's like, you got to keep finding ways to make sure that those balls are then lobbed out into the future for future consumption.
Right.
And that was largely where I was placing like a lot of like my efforts and resources, and everything was all in the name of this particular act. And so that's like, you know, I'm like trying to like dial back from that particular end of the spectrum so that like I'm doing things that like achieve more like actual genuine happiness.
Okay.
Then on the other end of the spectrum is this idea of nihilism, which I think that there is an interpretation of this that has like religious connotations, which are not the ones that I would be using personally for this example.
Okay.
But nihilism would basically be like this argument that would suggest that like everything is arbitrary and that things don't matter.
Okay.
And so I think that probably part of like my hedonistic behavior was being like examined from a nihilistic standpoint of like, oh, you bought like that new pair of shoes, but those shoes don't actually make a difference to anything and therefore are arbitrary and unimportant. Don't do them. Like, which is an extreme, again, example. We're living on the extremes.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's like, I think it was almost like I balanced the hedonistic behaviors with nihilistic behaviors, where I started to like reach this point where it's like, well, nothing matters. Nothing's important. Like, why would I do that? Why would I invest the energy if it doesn't actually even matter at the end of the day at all?
I guess so. It feels like these don't feel as opposite as I feel like described.
I think it's, well, okay. Explain what you mean then.
I feel like if you feel like nothing matters, why not have as much fun as possible with no consequences?
I think
is just strictly hedonism then?
I think that's strictly hedonism.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Because I think that like the idea is that like if nothing matters, it's like what even is enjoyment?
Okay.
You know, like if that makes sense. So like I said,
I may as well just sit here.
May as well do nothing because none of it will matter anyway, which is not the right way to look at the world, just for what it's worth. But I think what's happened for me is that like more and more, I feel like I am starting to discover the polar ends of like certain life philosophies or approaches to different aspects of my life. And I think what's like, what's important to me is like, there is not like the knowledge, the fundamental basis of knowledge is knowing the two words. It's knowing that there are two ends of a spectrum to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for me, like that is something that I couldn't have articulated for a huge portion of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was doing something for hedonic reasons, or if I wasn't doing something for nihilistic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Say it again.
Okay. So in phases of life, was I doing something for a very hedonistic reason? So like purchasing more aquarium tech, for example.
Okay.
Like, you know, it's like I want to keep my interest in aquariums alive. So I need to get like the next piece of equipment, because otherwise I feel like my interest is waning. But if I get that new piece of equipment, that might like reinvigorate, like, you know, what's happening inside of the tank. And then my interest will be like re-elevated.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And then nihilism might sort of be like, well, what's even the point of going out downtown and dancing if I'm like, you know, not interested in like meeting anybody in that capacity? And it's like, well, because it's fun to go outside and be around
because
other
you
people.
Just personally enjoy it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, yes. Yeah, but is that enough of a reason? And it's like, again, the answer is yes. However, my brain has argued to myself before that it isn't enough of a reason. So this is what I'm trying to say. So it's like, I think without realizing it, I've probably subscribed to both ends of the spectrum throughout life without being able to give a name or an understanding to either.
Okay.
So I think like the knowledge on one level is learning the spectrum exists. I think curiosity is like the desire for the wisdom that is necessary to know how to use them both to your advantage. And I think wisdom is enacting this particular outcome.
Okay.
It's like you have learned like, okay, there's column A, there's column B. You got to have a little bit of both,
mm-hmm,
in order to like, you know, live your happy existence. And then, yeah, so that would ultimately become like wisdom is like, where do you exist between the poles? And then I think there's like humility, which comes at the end of the spectrum, which would basically be like the recognition even for other people that the interpretation of these poles is incredibly complicated.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, like even as you're saying it, I'm like, just because like one extreme might be hedonism and one extreme might be nihilism, that doesn't classify all behavior as either hedonistic or nihilistic.
No, not necessarily. No, but I think that they can be motivating forces for behavior or not behavior for in like many instances.
Sure.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that like this has just been like, I think it's been something that I've been trying to do over like the past several years of my life, is going through and like examining past experiences and trying to understand like the root behavior that was like leading me to do this, that, or the
sure
other. And then like being able to assign those root behaviors the specific names, and then sort of like with that understanding in mind, like reframing like a new version of myself, and then attempting to find passion inside of that like new understanding of the world.
Okay. Why were you so determined to understand this like to begin with? Like what drove you? What was like, were you like unhappy with your state of being?
I think like there's probably always like, how do you answer the question? I think that like there's certain things that I would do, like I think like shopping, for example, was something for like a little while where it was like we used to have this like running joke in office, like, oh, Ben bought a thing, you know, like it was, yeah, sort of like a running gag almost. But then it's sort of like, but like, you know, then like as you sort of like start to like look at yourself, it's like, well, okay, this like can cost money for Ben to always buy a thing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, well, how is that then like impacting like my own like financial security, mm-hmm, so to speak? And it's like, okay, well, now I need to understand like, well, what is driving me to buy the next thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that a lot of that drive would be that hedonic treadmill example, where you're sort of like you wanted the next piece of like positive thing to happen. And so you just kept lobbing more things out there to happen.
Right. No faith that positivity would just come to you.
Well, explain what you mean by that.
It just sounds like you were constant, like you even said, like you're constantly trying to set up the next fun thing that will happen. Like have to plan another trip, have to have something coming in the mail, have to have like a party on the horizon. Like
yes.
Have to make sure that it is happening for yourself without like any faith that like good things will just happen without any planning.
Yes. Yes. No, I think that's a good interpretation of it actually. Yeah. Yes. And so that's, it's probably taking, like assuming too much responsibility that you're like assuming too much responsibility that any enjoyment in life must be like created by your own individual self.
Interesting.
Which I, again, I do not think is true.
Right.
Like, I don't think that is like the way to live, but yeah. I do think historically it is how I have
right.
lived.
Okay.
And so it's like when you're trying to break free of those molds and live like in a more intentional or meaningful manner, like, this is like where it's like you almost need to know like what the landscape is, like what does drive people, mm-hmm. what has driven me in the past, and why has it driven me in the past?
Right. It is always interesting to hear like your perspective on these things and like get inside your head and like what your motivations were, because it's like it is like I'm like thinking about this like on my end, like do I like exhibit this behavior or anything? And it's like I don't think I've ever really thought about it like that like I need to constantly make sure that I am like setting a new thing to like be looking forward to,
sure,
or something like I like that otherwise or else suffer like misery or something.
Yeah, right. You know. Well, and this is probably where it was kind of interesting because we were talking about like the flow states earlier.
Yeah.
And I would argue your way of existence is much more of just like residing inside of like an actual flow state.
Sure.
Like
well, thank you.
Yes, yeah.
That's one of the best compliments I've ever heard.
Exactly. Like, because I think what's happening is like, you know, you go back to Beat Sabers and you were saying like sort of, it's like if you're sitting there like watching each block come at you and you're trying to say like, okay, like right hand left hand up, right, you know, right yeah. hand down, whatever. It's like that you're not like just reacting to the motion of everything that's coming at you all at once. You're trying to make like tiny little decisions to make sure that your brain is actively agreeing with your instincts.
Yeah.
And so it's like, cause I think that that's like exactly what happened. It's like, okay, well, let me fact check before I move my right hand up. It's like, okay, yes. In fact, block is coming at me. The arrow is pointing up. Okay, good. Confirmed. You know, right. It's like you're spending way too much time thinking about it and not nearly enough time just simply
doing it. Yeah.
Which is also part of like, I think, it's like I think I've gone through like a giant like somersault, so to speak, where it's like, okay, what was causing, you know, this particular thing that needed adjustment in the past? You go and you learn the underlying reason behind that particular activity or behavior, but then you become way too aware of it to the point where you're like now inhibiting your ability to just simply enjoy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's like now it's like I feel like now what I need to do is like it's like, okay, Ben, you've learned a whole bunch of stuff. Trust it, go out and into the world. And now start just like existing.
Yeah. Like, what do you like to do?
Oh, wow. What a loaded question. It's like you go back to rock climbing, for example, which is like probably the number one answer I've ever had for anything.
I'm just going to like smack you in the face next week if you don't go rock climbing soon. Like,
yeah, well,
just, you know, like here, like you so obviously enjoy it and like it and you don't go. And it is like it is a mystery to me. Like you don't need other people there to enjoy it. You intrinsically enjoy it and you still don't do it.
Here's the argument, though, is that it's like, yeah, like you said, intrinsically enjoy it. However, what I enjoyed the most about the activity, it's like the question is, because I think like this is something like we're
you're doing
like,
it right now. You're overthinking it right now.
To enjoy something in its most fundamental capacity is like the relationship between like you and the wall and the rocks and like the sensation of being there and the sweat and the grit and the pain and like the blisters and like all of like everything that goes into it. And it's like, I know that the ride that I went on when I was doing this particular activity, it was like a one-way trip nowhere but straight up.
Yeah.
Like I got in there and it was like, it was the most confidence building thing I've ever done in my entire life because I was just good at something.
Yeah.
And so it's like when you're in that environment, you get to go and you get to be like consistently like on the up, the up, the up, the up, because there's nothing more fun than being on an upward trajectory.
Yeah.
Like that is a blast always. And so for the longest period of time, it was like I was able to incrementally like move up. And then it was like when the sport stopped being fun for me is when it was like I stopped being able to continue to go up, which is then forcing the question of like, was I enjoying excelling in an activity or was I enjoying the activity itself?
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the question. That is what I come back to.
Mm-hmm. I think that a bunch of things coincided with when we like stopped going to the gym and that you have convinced yourself that's the reason. But I think you could go by yourself at 6 a.m. with no one in the gym and progress 0 for the next 5 months and have a blast.
Okay.
That's what I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks. Anyway, so that was that. That's been like the like some of the big wheels turning in my brain lately is just sort of like looking at like the polar ends of any certain kind of philosophy and realizing that probably the answer lies somewhere inside of the middle. Mm-hmm. And I think that the more that like I can inform my own brain with this particular vocabulary, at least it makes me feel more qualified to go and live life. But again, the big argument again in your favor would sort of be the sentiment that I think that when I would have enjoyed myself the most in life is when I wasn't thinking about any of this stuff at all.
Yeah.
So it's like I even this is its own like third dimension of like introspection where it's sort of like,
yeah, but like it's okay. It's not like it's like necessarily holding you back or anything. Like, you know, you're talking about like the roller hockey example earlier, and it's like there's like how you felt like you could get into a flow state, but it wasn't like the first time you were doing it or anything. So it's like you still can't like enter that state until you've had experience with the like thing you're doing to begin with. So in a way, like having a, like for you, having an understanding of these things is like, might be what allows you to like enter into that way where you don't have to think about it anymore because like the variables have been removed and it's like, now you have experience with like the hedonic treadmill. So you can just like live a little more natural. It's like, you know, you're never going to be in a flow. You're never going to throw those darts and hit the bullseye the first time you do it.
Right.
But like, if you have muscle memory from 10,000 dart throws, then like there's a chance that you're brain can disconnect from the motion and just do the physics for you and let your arm fly and hit the bullseye, like because it can like call back on its experience and like that's getting in there.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like there will be times I think where like in your future your brain is like doing this. You will be able to like get there without having to like consider all these variables because you have considered them.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's the grand question for me is that sort of like if all of this stuff that I'm doing right now has been like a giant training mission for like what I'm actually seeking out of my life, where yeah. It's sort of like all the introspection, all this time, like this is like the blood, sweat, and tears stage. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, you know, anybody who you've ever seen, like, you know, win that Olympic gold and they fall on their knees and they're just like in absolute tears because they're like waking up at 4 a.m. for like 20 years of my life and all this training and all this hardship and all the injuries that we had to overcome and, you know, all culminating to this exact moment right here. And we just did it. It's like, that is the question as like whether or not like this is like the area where I'm like, the mental gymnastics is like my sport right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, am I getting better at it? Am I learning? Am I progressing and growing to the point where like eventually there will be like that like you break through the other side and it's like, boom, I did it.
Boom.
Like mental gold medal to myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then what? Then you just live happy?
I guess so. Maybe sail around the world or something.
All right.
You
know, yeah.
Go like a little boat with like a sailboat.
You know where I think I can see people failing at this the most is whenever we go to trampoline parks.
Oh, really?
Yes. You know why? Because there will be adults that just stand there and watch their kids and don't jump on the trampoline. And
what
I'm like,
are they
you're
thinking?
All lying to yourself. You're all so afraid of enjoying yourself that you won't get out there and do it because there's almost nothing more fun than jumping on trampolines.
Yeah.
Like there, it is like such a freeing thing. You're literally free in the air and I'll watch people just not do it. And I'm like, you're like optionally missing out and I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, maybe it's like dancing, you know, it's like we've talked about
that
a million times.
That's
yeah.
the thing.
It's like, cause I mean, I'm sure like a lot of people would describe dancing in that same exact capacity where it's like, why would you not be out here? It's like, there is nothing more fun. Like everybody's being being silly. Everybody is just like flowing with the music.
I guess. Dancing, there's a little bit more subjectivity, I would say. There's like, you know, you could look, I mean, not that anyone has ever, like, I've never really judged anyone I've seen dancing and been like, oh, this guy. But like, trampoline, there's no way to look stupid jumping, you know? Not that I know.
It's just inherently cool.
Right. You're just jumping, you know? Just go straight. You don't have to do anything cool. Just go straight up and down, you know?
Just bounce.
You know? You're aware that this lets you jump high, right? Like, you can jump right now and you would only go like 6 inches. I could jump here. I'm like 5 feet in the air, man.
Like, there is nothing cooler than jumping high. It's
so fun.
I love it. Anyway, okay. So maybe a homework for everybody is to go to a trampoline park.
Just jump on a trampoline, you know? Yeah. Trampolines are so much fun.
Right. Yep. How to break free of the shell. That's the other thing too, is that like there's something cool about like the opportunity. So again, this goes back more to like the coaching roller hockey or being aquarium people is like I think that my hope, my wish, my goal, if any of those things could exist, probably not even like the center of my consciousness, but I feel like there is some desire inside of me that like hopes that if any of these things that I've ever said on the internet has helped people break down the same walls that like I'm actively attempting to break down. It's like, mm-hmm. sometimes I'm like, the pop for me is like a live, it's like an avatar. Like, you know, they have to like talk to the thing and be like, yeah, today we went out and we like learned how to like jump from tree to tree and I bonded with like a horse or something.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like a video log diary of like all the stuff that's happening. It's like, sometimes I hope for me, like what the pop is, it's sort of just, it's like, you guys are hearing like my inner monologue. You're just getting like all the stages as I'm slowly putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And maybe someone else out there is like, Ben, I'm right there with you. I'm doing it too.
It makes sense to
right.
me.
It's like you helped. So anyway, that's maybe like the other thing too. It's like, you know, there's like the reason for yourself to want to do it. And then there's the reason to like want to know how to do it, because then you can share it with other people. And if you can share it with other people, you can make other people's lives better. And then that would make your life better too.
Oh man. Maybe you should play Beat Sabers too.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah.
Just get lost in it, man.
Exactly.
Right. That's the cool thing about VR that I think probably lends itself to this is that like you really like, it is very effective at like blocking, like literally blocking out the rest of the world.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like there is no distractions around you, because it's all you can, it's like your whole world, it's all of your vision is even, and your, like, you know, the sound is encapsulated in it,
right?
And I think that like helps you get there,
which is this is also like going to be one of those very 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 interesting things as VR continues to develop. Is like, I mean, it, I feel like even as you're describing it, I was like, this is the Ready Player One argument.
Well,
like,
those people aren't in flow states. That's just escapism.
That is escapism. That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. I think, look at that distinction.
Wow.
We have poles.
There we go.
Now you have to live between those. Yeah. Or just exist in a flow state at all times.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, guys. Just be in the zone.
The government calls at 6:30.
Oh, guys, thank you so much, as ever, for tuning in and listening to the show. If you have any feedback for us, you can send it on over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to support the show, we have a really cool promo going on over on Patreon for our quarterly merch, where, because we've been so obsessed with pins lately, we are doing a 5-pin set for Popcorn Culture, where there'll be 5 collectible pins that can only be picked up through this particular avenue. They're going to be super cool, very unique, and you can just sign up at patreon.com/popcornculture, select the quarterly merch tier, but otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.